Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. You're listening to a previously recorded show, Foundations of Estate Planning. I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi.
Hey, continuing our look at the foundational questions, foundational issues you need to address with people when they're creating a plan with you, hopefully a trust. You prefer trusts in helping people with their estate and getting into some more specifics about some of the financial assets that are part of trusts. And you want to look first this week at IRAs. How those are handled within a trust versus using a beneficiary designation and so forth.
Yeah, this is a little more of a complicated discussion. And so where we've been is we've been talking about foundational questions that I would ask somebody when they come into the office. And my approach is that I want to do a deeper dive into the estate planning process. My goal is that if I can create a plan that will withstand the worst case scenario, then it can certainly withstand the best case scenario. But unfortunately, what I see a lot in my industry and what I see roll across my desk all too often are templated documents that are rudimentary in their foundations. And I just don't think that rudimentary documents are going to cut it at the end of the day. As a matter of fact, that is my experience, that unfortunately, more simple templated documents do not handle every circumstance well. And so therefore, it creates something that was not expected. So therefore, we want to have a deeper discussion, make sure that I ask the layered questions to pull out answers for the just in case. I don't want to be presented an opportunity that is not accounted for, because that's what's going to create difficulty in helping a client during their lifetime. And when they pass away, it's not going to be as smooth of a transition for the family. I think most people want a smooth transition. That's why they do estate planning, or they think that there's going to be a smooth transition. So I want to make sure that everything we do is done with the highest level of excellence to accomplish that primary goal of my clients, which is let's make sure I don't leave a mess behind. Let's make sure we get everything moving forward and that my children, my beneficiaries, have a really fluid process. Well, when we look at what assets are in an estate, there's assets that are very common. Number one, almost all of us have a bank account, or all of us have a bank account. So we know how to manage that. And many of us have an investment portfolio, and others of us have homes. Maybe some of us have life insurance or annuities. And a majority of all of these assets that I've just mentioned are what I would call non-qualified funds. In other words, they are not IRA money. They're not retirement money in one way or another. So the taxes have already been paid on that money. And then we take after-tax money, we buy a home, we put it in our bank account, we invest it. And all of these assets should be titled in the name of a trust. Every bank account, every piece of property that you own, investment accounts, and the list goes on. So these things should be in the trust. When it is in the name of the trust, then the instructions of the trust attach to that asset, and the instructions then tell us what to do with that asset. So typically, we want every asset, when you have a revocable living trust, to be in the name of the trust. That's how it works. We call that funding, or we want to make sure that every financial account is integrated with the trust and with the plan itself. Now, there's one asset that we cannot put into a trust. Well, we could, but it would be a very, very bad tax problem. So we never put a IRA into a revocable living trust.
Yeah, I didn't think you did.
Yep. So where we're at is we've created a trust, a revocable living trust. Revocable means I'm in full power and control, and it's going to take care of me during my lifetime. That's the living part. And the trust is the instrument. Okay. It's a contract. So revocable living trust, that is the most standard way to do estate planning nowadays. And this is the instrument that I'm talking about. So that allows you to remain in control and make fine-tuned adjustments throughout your lifetime. The document should take good care of you and then give us instructions on what to do when you pass away. Now, there's one asset that is not in a trust, and that is an IRA. An IRA, by tax law, must remain in the participant's name. So whoever is earning the IRA, it must stay in their name. Or if I've passed away, my spouse may have, if she's the first beneficiary, she may be able to do what we call a rollover and put it into her name, and there's no tax consequence. Now, we understand what IRAs are. Now, it could be a 401k, it can be a 403b. There's many different numbers associated. They're all referring back to the tax code, but there's many different types of deferred tax systems. Okay, so that all of these have a deferred tax quality about them. So I'm just going to refer to them generally as an IRA. We need to use a beneficiary designation. Now, in most trusts, we would not make the trust the beneficiary. Okay, so I want to talk the base level first, and then I'm going to present a different point of view when the trust is done properly. If an IRA is pointed to a trust, so we use the beneficiary designation and we say, oh, give it to my spouse. But if my spouse has died before me and he or she is not there, then leave it to my trust. Okay. If you tell a CPA this, or if you tell a financial advisor this, they will have a very knee-jerk reaction that says, don't do that. Now, their knee-jerk reaction is actually appropriate for most trusts. Not all, but for most trusts. And the reason that they're doing that is that if it goes to a trust instead of an individual, then there are one of two different rules: that either the IRA must immediately be taxed, or within 5 years, it needs to be taxed. So we have one of two systems. I'm not going to get into the details of each of those, but both of them are speeding up when the taxes are due. And if you speed up when the tax is due, then a larger amount of money is exposed to the taxing system all at once. Mm. So let's say that I die and I have a $250,000 IRA account. Heck, let's even make it $1 million IRA account, okay, just for the sake of argument. If I were to leave that to a templated trust that does not have appropriate language in it, my beneficiaries, or actually my estate, because now it's going to the estate, it's not going to an individual. Mm. Now, when it goes to my estate, that entire $1 million may be subject to immediate income tax. Mm. That's a bad income tax. Mm-hmm. Versus if I had left it to a person, okay, so I have two daughters. So now my $1 million story is that I leave each of them as the beneficiaries. Well, let me back up. I'm married. I better include my wife first. She would appreciate this. So I pass away first, and my wife is the first beneficiary. So my wife can take that IRA, and it's called a rollover. So she can roll it over into her own name, and there's no tax that is due because she is a spouse. There's a tax code that's it's a terminology where there is an unlimited marital deduction, which means that if I leave anything to a spouse, that they get it with an unlimited amount and no taxes due. Okay, so we have an unlimited deduction from taxes. Okay, we like it when there's no taxes. So my spouse can take my stuff. No taxes are due, including even an IRA. So she would have the privilege of taking that account, putting it into her own name, and then continue to take the distributions according to any type of required minimum distributions based upon age. there's more nuances of whether I have already started distributions or not. And I'm not going to get into all the details. Just understand that she can take it, no tax. She can use that IRA for the rest of her life. And it's only taxed when she uses some of the money or when she's required to take some of it. Okay. So now we're distributing to her little by little. That's a good thing because we don't run up the tax bill. Now we have our girls as the beneficiaries thereafter. Let's say my wife got the used the IRA, but when she passes away, there's exactly $1 million in it, just like when I died, because that's exactly how it happens. So now there's $1 million in this again, and now it's going to two people. Okay. What is it? 3 years ago now, almost 4 years, 4 years ago. Goodness, how time flies. Congress made an adjustment to the IRA law to where now when a individual receives an inherited IRA, they have 10 years where they must take some of the IRA every year. But at the end of 10 years, they must cash it out in totality. So again, this is the IRS saying, I want our tax dollars faster, because it used to be that they could use it for the rest of their life, just like my spouse did. But now instead of their lifetime, they've shortened it to 10 years. That speeds up the taxing process. So now my kids, in essence, if my math is correct, I have 10 years, $500,000. That's $50,000 a year, right? That was pretty good. I did that off the top of my head. I want people to know I did not even use a calculator to get to that number, assuming it's right. So now my girls are taking $50,000 a year from an inherited IRA. Remember, the whole characteristic of an IRA is that it's never been taxed. So when you take the money out, it has to be taxed at that time.
A regular IRA. Now, you're not talking about Roths in this discussion.
That's correct. So
it's a regular IRA that's taxable.
There is a Roth IRA. That's a good point. In a Roth IRA, we're using after-tax money, and everything is distributed tax-free out of that, including the increase. But that is still under the same 10-year rule. So therefore, they would have to unwind that in 10 years, but they don't have to pay taxes on that money. So now back to a standard, not taxed IRA. When my girls take it, they have $50,000 of income in my story that they have to put on their 1040. They have to count it as regular income. And whatever they earn in their life through in that year, it gets added to that. So let's say they make $50,000 in a year based upon their own efforts. They took $50,000. Now they have $100,000 of income that year. Well, the taxing system has a graduated taxing system, but the taxes on that amount of money versus the problem of having the IRA go to a trust and being taxed at one moment in time, the entire $1 million, boy, that's a very different tax. So what we're doing is that when we leave it to an individual, we are taking our time and making smaller distributions from the inherited IRA. So therefore, in theory, the tax will be less on that amount instead of if we had left the IRA to the trust, in other words, to the estate. There is a probability that it has to all be taxed at one time, and we have $1 million that has to be taxed immediately. That's a very bad taxing result. So therefore, the knee-jerk reaction by CPAs and by your financial advisor, and now by you saying, I don't want my IRA to be taxed immediately, that's bad. You are correct. So in most scenarios, we are not going to leave an IRA to a trust because of taxing issues. All right, we're going to be up against a break, but I'm going to explain a different system when a trust is developed properly that we can actually move that an inherited IRA to the trust and not encounter that bad tax. Okay, and so let's talk about that on the back end of the break here.
Okay, we'll continue the discussion in just a moment. You're intrigued, though, by Paul's approach to this subject of trusts and some of these foundational questions. How do people find out more about your services, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. You're listening to a previously recorded show, Foundations of Estate Planning. I hope you enjoy it.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at foundational questions in estate planning this week and the use of trusts and how to handle IRAs with your trust. And Paul, some interesting ideas you're discussing here.
Yeah, so we've established that if you leave an IRA to a trust, that's bad. Okay, so that's bad. Now, unfortunately, I've been talking about IRAs and taxes, so I probably lost about 90% of the listening audience, but that's okay. If you're still with me, there are other options because... So if we use a traditional way to leave an IRA in our estate, so we list our spouse as the first beneficiary, and then we list our kids as the beneficiary, what's happening is that money is going outright to our children eventually, and it is outside the protections of a trust. Now, if you haven't been listening to me very long, there are protections that a trust should be giving your beneficiaries. What type of protections? Well, when it's developed right, it should actually shield them from some income tax issues. It should shield them from bad IRA taxes, like what we've just talked about before break. It should also shield them that if they were ever divorced, that a walking away spouse is not going to take their inheritance. If your child is ever in a bad car accident and it was their fault, the trust should protect them from a creditor coming after them and having a claim upon their inheritance. Now, remember, as you can hear me say, I'm really emphasizing it should do these things. Unfortunately, most trusts don't. And so... So you really need to connect with the right attorney that will get you to these right results. So we use trust for many purposes. Number one is to ensure that there are estate tax provisions so that we don't pay unnecessary estate taxes. There should be provisions about income tax that will help beneficiaries with their income tax. And there should be provisions about protecting your beneficiaries and shielding the assets from outside claims. Unfortunately, templated documents just don't do it. And so when you use an IRA and you put a beneficiary designation on it, it goes to that person and now it's outside the safety net of the trust. So we don't get the tax benefits. We don't get any type of shield around that money. It's put into their own hands. And by the way, IRAs are typically creditor protected by law. In Washington, we actually have a very, very strong creditor protection against IRA. So if I earn an IRA and I was in that car accident, someone sues me, my IRA should be protected in that scenario up to certain limits. So we actually have very good protection language around IRAs. However, the federal court system has said that protection exists for the participant and not necessarily in an inherited IRA. Mm. So when it becomes inherited, there is case law that would say those protections on an IRA that we like to have are now lost. So if we give an inherited IRA to our kids, there is a risk that we no longer have that nice credit proof language that Washington has helped everyone with, is potentially put to the wayside. And if they're going through a divorce or something in their life has not gone right, if they're already heading towards bankruptcy or other things, then maybe their inheritance can simply be taken. So when we leave it to a trust, when a trust is properly done, then a trust can hold an IRA. We still get the same 10-year rule as if it was given to a person, but now we have those nice protections that a trust should afford somebody, both in income tax, in estate tax planning, and with protection planning. And so all of this can be shielded around a beneficiary when properly done. So how is it properly done? Well, there is specific language that an attorney needs to put into your trust, or a trust must have, in order for it to receive an IRA and have the trust qualify as a person. So a trust, believe it or not, which is an innate object, can qualify under law as a person. When it happens that way, when the language actually allows the trust to be a person, then an inherited IRA can come to the trust, and we get all the benefits of the trust, plus we also get the benefit of the 10-year rule, okay? So there is specific language that needs to be in your trust. I would say this as a general rule, which is, number one, never take what I say as legal advice, because this is an educational show. This is not legal advice to now go out and make your trust the beneficiary of all of your IRAs. Please don't do that. Get together with an attorney that can guide you in how does your trust operate? Is the language proper? Should you be pointing your IRA to the trust so that you can get not just the proper tax benefits of the 10-year rule that we now have, but it could also get the benefits of being protected, income tax and estate tax benefits that the trust is supposed to be designed for. Mm. So unfortunately, what I see in almost every case is that the IRA is treated like a separate asset, and it is not incorporated into the estate plan other than it's getting to beneficiaries. So my question then back to somebody is, why would we have sometimes in people's lives their IRA and their house are the two biggest assets they own? Mm. And so why would we want one of the biggest assets to sidestep the trust and not have those protections, not be subject to the tax language that should be there, and just simply give it to a child or a beneficiary without those surrounding benefits? So my objective in estate planning is to make sure that every asset is looked at specifically, that the trust is dealing with every asset specifically, that the language inside the trust is going to give the successor trustee the ability to close the estate in a proper way and close the estate with the best tax advantages, mm-hmm. both income tax, estate tax, and the advantages given to beneficiaries, that every single asset that you own can be pulled under that system instead of one asset sitting off to the side, which is typically our IRA. Now, the other problem is that most trusts that I've reviewed that come from that when clients come in with a trust already, most of their assets aren't even in the trust anyway. So they don't have their checking accounts in their trust. Well, then the checking accounts aren't going to be under those rules. A lot of times, even their house is not in a trust. So now the house is not under those rules. So I've actually seen completely trusts that have no assets in them whatsoever.
Well, what's the point then of the trust?
Correct. It's just a big paperweight. So So going through every asset and ensuring that we have proper language, ensuring that every asset that you own can be captured by what you've created, it is critical. You must get to a good attorney that does this regularly, knows the tax laws, both of estate income and with IRAs, to ensure that every asset you own can be captured under the estate plan, that they all move simultaneously, they all have the same purpose, and they all have the same result to benefit those that you leave behind. You need to do strong estate planning, specifically with IRAs. Too often they're left out of the plan altogether. That is not necessary. Come on in. Let's take a look at what you got. We can do better.
Foundational questions regarding your trust planning, and you like Paul's approach to this subject. You want to find out more? How do people do that, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us. It's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.